Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories. On Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls _ Pep.
People have their opinion.
What other falsehoods are out there?
Well, a lot of the perception things about us.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
Rebuilds are difficult. Sometimes it takes years and years. I still believe, given a really good offseason with this draft pick that we have coming and with our ability to get some veteran players in here alongside these young guys, we can make a substantial leap.
Kick back, relax. Locked On Bulls starts now.
My job is to prepare the child for the road, not the road for the child. And these guys are men.
Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, streaming live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley. Along with me is Matt Peck. Follow us on Twitter, at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls _ Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Hit us up on our text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. Doing mailbag today, drop all of your voicemails, all of your text messages. Any questions about the offseason that is with the Bulls? You guys got thoughts on the NBA drafts, free agency in general, or even the NBA playoffs? We'd love to hear from you. So 331-979-1369 is the place to do that. Matt, the playoffs were ridiculous last night, and specifically Damian Lillard, the way he closed out Thunder. I hope everybody stayed up late enough to watch that game last night, but that shot reminded me of the Derrick Rose shot a few years ago when he banked it off against Cleveland for the win. So that was a pretty good game, and that OKC team was not too happy last night. But how you doing?
What up, Jordan? Yeah, that was just such a treat. What an amazing way to cap off last night's NBA playoff action. You know, reminded you of Derrick Rose. Certainly there were a lot of people who put up, you know, like a side-by-side picture of that Dame face when he was getting mobbed by his teammates, and Derrick Rose's dead-eyed stare being hoisted by Joakim. Also reminded me of when Dame hit a series-ending buzzer beater back in 2014. The dude's just crazy. And I like the greatest part to me is all of the reaction. Like, you know, it was just another reminder that NBA Twitter is the best. But everybody talking about Paul George's reaction afterwards at the podium, saying, you know, what, you know, he made it. It was a bad shot. Like, you know, good for him, he made it, but it was a bad shot. And I love that Rachel Nichols quote tweeted Paul George saying it was a bad shot by highlighting that Dame was 4 of 6 from when pulling up from beyond 30 feet in that game last night. So, like, dude, yes, in all realms of reality, when you're pulling up from that distance, and not just pulling up, but like a step back with Paul George, a perennial Defensive Player of the Year candidate, in your face, yes, by all accounts, that's a bad shot. But Dame, man, nobody drills those shots like he does. It was just so awesome.
I'm thinking about that Houston shot, and to me, yesterday's shot was way bigger. I mean, I get it. Closing out against Houston was one thing, but still, the shot was way longer than the one he took against Houston. I don't know. To me, Paul George, you can say it's a crappy shot, but like you said, when you go 4 for 6 from beyond 30 feet, like, dude, it's hard to call that a bad shot, at least for Damian Lillard there. So the playoffs have been good otherwise. I mean, some of these games have been blowouts. Like the 76ers and Nets game was all right. I mean, it was a blowout though, but continue to watch the NBA playoffs. And while that's going on, we're going to continue to talk about the Bulls here. The NBA draft is just a few weeks away, and we're going to be taking your text messages and voicemails on today's episode. First up is 630. It just simply says Scott Brooks in Washington, maybe. Probably going back, Matt, to our conversation about what's going to, if Jim Boylan's actually going to get extension this summer and if he's going to be the guy going forward. We've seen some other coaches move, actually, yesterday, more specifically in Igor Kokoskov getting fired from the Suns. It seems like every coach at the bottom tier, and even some teams that have had some success, are firing their coaches, and yet the Bulls are staying with Jim Boylan. Look, you guys can suggest coaches, but I'm convinced Boylan's coming back unless, I don't even know. I can't even think of a case where Boylan wouldn't come back at this point. I feel so strongly about how the front office feels about him and the direction they want to go with him. So I'm out on Scott Brooks, and I'm out on any coaching suggestions at this point because I'm not convinced Boylan is leaving.
Yeah, it's just kind of disheartening and annoying to just hear all of this talk around the league about who's interviewing where and teams giving assistant coaches permission to take meetings and interviews with other teams, especially Monty Williams, who's a really hot name right now. And I think that Monty Williams would be a great guy to lead this young Bulls team and have them take a next step. I think the guy's a great coach. And it's just really unfortunate that all this coaching, you know, chairs are switching around and teams out there seeing who's available and making changes if they want to. And we're just, as you said, kind of stuck with the reality that right now John Paxson and Michael Reinsdorf are in love with Jim Boylan and the way he operates, and that, you know, nothing is official yet, but we're expecting an extension to happen at some point this offseason. And Jim's their guy moving forward. And it's, you know, it's a shame, because I think that this team would benefit from at least conducting a coaching search to see if there are better options out there. Because there are a lot of NBA teams looking for a new coach this season, and there are a lot of solid candidates, and the Bulls just, you know, true to their nature, seem to be perfectly happy keeping things in-house and not really doing a whole lot of exterior searching. So, you know, in that way, it's you know, it's annoying, and it's also kind of like a waste of your time as a Bulls fan to get your hopes up about, oh, they should interview this guy, or they should look at that guy, or this assistant coach from this team would be a great candidate. It's wasted breath, and it's wasted brain space, unfortunately, because everything we've heard suggests that there is no coaching search for the Bulls right now. They have their guy.
It's kind of funny. You look at the Suns and the biggest dumpster fire, at least over the last couple of weeks. Everybody in Phoenix is like, well, what the hell did we just do? We just passed up on Luka Doncic, followed Igor Kokoskov down this road for 1 year, and then all of a sudden you launched him. I mean, to me, very bizarre for the Suns, and I don't know how they're going to figure things out. But like you said, Boylan's the guy, and I think maybe the only thing that changes my mind a little bit, and maybe not even then, is if the Bulls end up with the number one pick and end up with Zion, and then you really have some eyes and some attention on some other, maybe some top tier coaches or at least second tier coaches. So they would be foolish not to at least think about what other coaches are out there. But it seems like everybody's kind of finding their landing spot now before the lottery. But I mean, we can keep tabs on things like that. But yeah, I think for those fans that aren't really that high on Boylan, unfortunately, I think he's going to be back next year, 99%. So thanks for the text, though. Appreciate it. Next one from the 808. Matt, this is talking specifically about Seth Curry. What do you think about Seth Curry targeting him as a starting point guard for next season? We just saw him in the Portland series. Kind of one of these fringe guys that can play maybe 20, 25 minutes. I don't know about a starter, but our texter in the 808 brings up that he'd probably be pretty cheap at like $5 to $7 million range and offers three-point shooting and the ability to pass and distribute. So Seth Curry or any of these other maybe fringe point guards outside of the top guys that we've talked about already, do those gauge any of your interest?
Potentially. You know, Seth is going to be an unrestricted free agent this summer and probably a guy in tier two or tier three. You know, he's got some interesting potential. He is a career 43.9 three-point percent shooter. Although it's not like a huge volume, and it's kind of it has picked up recently in his last couple of seasons where he's bounced around, and that to me is like the thing that makes me raise an eyebrow a little bit, is that the guy, I mean, he's been in the league for what, five seasons, and he's played for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 teams. So, like, to me, that, like, when a guy changes teams that frequently in his first, like, rookie deal worth of time in the league, it makes me a little guarded about, is there a reason that this guy keeps bouncing around? So, he's a name that you could throw into the conversation for a potential guy who could maybe work well with LaVine, and the fact that he can play off the ball a little bit, and maybe he can be a reliable three-point shooter to space the floor for the Bulls. But I got to say, like, the thing that I just can't not think about when you talk about Seth Curry tonight or today is, did you see his involvement in the Dame shot last night, Jordan?
I didn't catch it. What was it?
He was down in the left corner. He was on the floor for the final Dame shot. He went down and was chilling in the left, like, three-point corner right by the Thunder bench. And you could see he was just kind of, like, hands on knees watching, because everybody knew Dame was going to take the last shot. And he had, like, said a couple of things. You couldn't make it out from the video that I saw, but you could see that he was, like, turning over to the Thunder bench to probably be like, yo, watch this. Like, Dame's about to end your season. And then just watch Dame's shot go up and go in. And while all of the other teammates were just going crazy and mobbing Dame, Seth Curry just turned back and just stared a death stare at the Thunder bench. It was awesome.
That is pretty awesome. I mean, Seth Curry, not a bad option. I mean, 5 to 7 million, I don't know. He didn't play in 2017, 2018. He's going to be 29 next year. 7.9 points per game, 1.6 rebounds, 0.9 assists this season in only about 19 minutes per game. Did shoot 45.6% from the field, and he shot a ridiculous 45% from three on 3.5 attempts this season. So he's been a good three-point shooter. If there's anything really strong about his game, his three-point shooting has been on point. I mean, he started only 42 games in Dallas in 2016-2017, and he's only started 53 games in his entire career, so... as a G League guy, a guy that made it through, and that's kind of why he's been, I think, why he's been on all these different teams. He's trying to grind it out through the G League and then ultimately make it to the NBA. But if you're asking me if Seth Curry is a guy that I'm gonna get excited about this summer, probably not. I'll just put it there. If that's the guy that's gonna come in and be one of your main veteran point guards, something went wrong. You missed on the top five, top seven guys that were out there that we thought the Bulls were going to pursue this summer. So I'll be a little disappointed, but I think he could be a good part of this team. I just don't know how much better you get from there. Matt, thinking about this, though, quickly, the last couple of days, I'm curious, do you think there's any way that the Bulls could pluck either the 12th, 13th, or 14th pick, specifically looking at Miami and how much cap trouble they're in this summer, and thinking about if there's any possibility in making a trade where if the Bulls do fall out of the first or the second pick and say they end up 3, 4, or 5, they could add an additional pick, maybe specifically taking some money off of Miami's hands. I was thinking more so along the lines of what would it take to package taking Kelly Olynyk's money, which they're looking to move, and their 13th overall pick this summer. What would that take in order for the Bulls to get, say they don't land John Morant or Zion Williamson? Would you be interested in that, thinking maybe we'd have to give up a combination of a couple players on this Bulls team and take on Kelly Olynyk's $26 million remaining in order to maybe land that 12th, 13th, or 14th pick in this lottery? Is there anybody that you'd get excited about there, and maybe a potential point guard at that point if the Bulls are looking to make different moves?
So you're talking about taking on money to add another late lottery pick to the one that the Bulls already have.
Correct.
That's what you're talking about. And not,
yes,
to swing that pick and their own for something else, but to just keep that pick and use that pick.
Not trade their own pick, but yes, but add an additional lottery pick. And by taking on maybe Kelly Olynyk's money, or maybe somebody else that's on this, maybe even, I don't know, Hassan Whiteside wouldn't work out because the Bulls don't have enough to trade back. But Olynyk was the player that I was thinking, because he's on additional money beyond next season. So he's owed $26 million for 2 years.
What's the point? This draft is not good enough to add a late lottery pick to use it yourself, in my opinion. If the Bulls were to do something like that, like trying to acquire another pick, to me, the most logical thing would be to package a late lottery pick and their own, hopefully high lottery pick outside the top two, to get an asset, aka a player that they can add to this roster right away to make an impact. To me, there is not value worth taking on bad money for when you're talking about picks 11, 12, 13 in this draft class. I like, to me, that's that like, that makes no sense.
The reason why I bring it up is because I've seen Darius Garland and Coby White fall between this range of 8 and 13. 8 through 13, 8 through 15, and specifically Darius Garland. And maybe this is something that we can continue to monitor over the next couple of weeks once the draft happens and then the combine. But just seeing these guys be in that range and trying to figure out if there are other teams that are willing to say, you know what, if you take on some of the money that we have and the cap trouble that we're in, we'd be willing to part with our first round pick this year. And for the Bulls, if you're going to lose out on Ja or Zion, and you can still take your wing at 3, 4, 5, and maybe you can get a point guard on top of that. You know, if they're high on Darius Garland or Coby White and they end up sliding between 8 and 13, that's where I was thinking of it from, more so than anything, is maybe have a potential to take on some old money from somebody else and fill a position of need, maybe a backup big, and still pay out that money, because that money will be off when Otto Porter is off, and still add your point guard that you were looking for. You know, we talked yesterday for a little while about how I don't know if I'm feeling comfortable about the Bulls reaching on Darius Garland at 3 or 4 or Coby White at that point. But if you add some money and add a pick at the back end of the lottery, maybe that's a possibility.
But to me, like, so if you're going to do that, then why not just trade down out of the pick that you have? To me, you can get if instead of like, we'll take one of these wings with 3 or 4 or 5 or whatever, if that's the case, and then also take on this bad unwanted contract to get another pick so that we can take a point guard later in the lottery without feeling like we're reaching for him. If that's the case, then just trade down and take a point guard without taking on bad money. Like, that's what I would do if I were the Bulls front office and I didn't love any of the options at the wing. Do your homework, make your phone calls, figure out who's going to go where, who's going to be taking what spots, and then trade down to a spot where you feel like you can get a point guard that you want without reaching, and also potentially add some kind of asset by trading down out of your pick at 3 or 4 or 5.
Yeah, the only thing I think about is if the Bulls are high on one of those wings. And, you know, the Bulls are going to have to spend their money in free agency this year, and I don't know if two one-year contracts is really that likely for the players that we're looking for, right? The point guard position and also a backup big. Like, a backup big will be easier to find at a one-year deal than maybe a point guard will. But to me, that's kind of the scenario I was looking at. And, look, it's not anything big or anything like that, but if the Bulls were enticed enough to say, okay, Darius Garland's falling off this board and we still really like him, and is there any possibility that we could maybe swing a deal where we get another additional pick in this draft? Maybe. And Kelly Olynyk's not really on that bad of a deal. It's more so that the Heat have the second highest cap in all of the NBA, and they're going to have to shed some of that money this summer. And I think Hassan Whiteside's going to be the first guy to go, maybe James Johnson, and also Kelly Olynyk. So it was just an idea, and just kind of thinking outside the box and other moves the Bulls could make instead of spending all their money on free agency and winding up at 3 or 4 and winding up with another wing that they don't necessarily need. They can use, but they don't necessarily need. So maybe it would be a win at both points. But I see your point about how it being difficult and taking on money for a guy that maybe you don't really want in Olynyk beyond just this year.
Well, and, you know, to me, it's not about the guy that whose contract you're taking on. It is just plain and simply about I don't like this draft class enough to feel like the Bulls need to be adding another pick just because they're in a situation where, oh, we didn't get lucky, we didn't get 1 or 2, and we don't want to reach on a guy at 3 or 4 or 5 or 6. So we're going to use that pick on a wing that we feel meh about and then try and add another pick to take a point guard because that's the position we need to address. To me, this draft is not good enough to talk about adding another lottery pick. It's just not.
That's fair enough. And I don't think it is either. I don't think it's as strong. I worry about the Bulls this summer in free agency, and I worry about that point guard position again. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do too. Yeah, absolutely. I do too. Because, you know, they have some money to work with, but it's about finding the right guys on the right deals. And, you know, they as we were saying, you know, earlier this week, like, offseason is going to be huge. They need to nail these decisions. Speaking of free agency and veteran point guards that the Bulls might look to address with their backcourt needs, this question comes to us on Twitter. Mike B on Twitter: I'm surprised nobody's talking about Isaiah Thomas as a candidate for the Bulls. He's got heart, winning history, terrific floor general, interested to hear your thoughts on the pod. I can almost hear Matt calling me an idiot already. Thanks for the question, Mike B. That's one that I had not heard yet, Jordan. What are your thoughts on Isaiah Thomas being added to this Bulls backcourt in the offseason?
Yeah, I saw this. His stats weren't very good this season. Like, granted, he only played in 12 games and he was battling injury all season, so I'll give him some credit and some slack on that. But the dude has played in 44 games in 2 years. Yeah, 44 games in 2 years. So, I mean, he's in the back end of his career, and it's hard to say back end for him, but he's had a lot of injuries, man. And I think that's the biggest thing is can he stay healthy? And he's not a defensive upgrade either, too. So you're asking for him to come in and shoot and score off that bench. And it's like, to me, it's similar to talking about adding Derrick Rose. Is Derrick Rose is going to come in and he's going to score for you off that bench. And that's the biggest strength for him. And also, too, that's what I feel like with Isaiah Thomas. He shot pretty decently with the Lakers last year when he went there for 17 games. But still, I'm not all that thrilled. I don't think it would cost you that much money to sign Isaiah Thomas. I just think that there's going to be some weaknesses there. I don't hate it, but I don't love it at the same time, and I'm just very curious about how much money it would actually cost you to sign Isaiah Thomas and what he thinks he can get this offseason being fully healthy.
Yeah, to me, it's so much about the injury history, and it's a big part of the reason why I think that Derek is a terrible idea. Like, Bulls fans are constantly complaining about how this roster isn't healthy, so, you know, what does adding Isaiah Thomas do? He's a guy that I certainly root for and would like to see him make a comeback. And, you know, the story from when the Bulls and Celtics had that first round series and his sister had just passed away and, you know, he played through injury and all this stuff and then felt like there was just no loyalty. Boston traded him away after the Celtics fan base totally embraced and fell in love with him. The guy's got a fascinating story, and I hope that his NBA career is not over, and I hope that he gets another shot to prove that he can come back from this. But to me, there's just way too much of a risk in signing that guy. And your point about the defense is a good one. I would like the Bulls to add a competent, at least, defensive player to pair with Zach LaVine. You know, assuming that Chris Dunn is moving on and certainly is at least not going to be our starter next season. You got to have some kind of defensive capability in that backcourt to help Zach a little bit.
I'm more on board with ideas like this and bringing Isaiah Thomas or some of these other guys that, you know, we're a little bit worried or concerned about as far as their health goes and what production that they can have if they draft a point guard. If they get Ja Morant, then I think I'm a little bit more open to something like this. Like, I need to know that somebody's going to be able to start 65, 70 games for me next year. In that point guard position, though, you know, we have to know that because I can't deal with another season where the Bulls are sending out their second or third tier point guard, and it doesn't work, and it doesn't make this offense run, it doesn't make this team run, and we saw a lot of those problems with Chris Dunn. As good as he played in some stretches, it would seem to be followed up by an injury, and he was gone for 2, 3, 4 weeks at a time, and I'm very nervous that if you give Isaiah Thomas or any of these other point guards that could potentially start for you, ample opportunity, there is a severe risk for injury. So he's not that bad, and I think he'd be a cheap option, so I would keep that door open. All I'm saying is he was a negative 4.3 on the floor this year, a negative 7.3 last year, and an on-off of negative 8.4 this year and a negative 7.9 last year. So he hasn't impacted his teams over the last 2 years very well, but he hasn't been fully healthy either. So interesting idea, but I need the Bulls to have some sort of concrete plan for that starting position in order to take a risk on him or somebody even like Derrick Rose.
Another one, and this one I think was our friend Gustavo on Twitter said, what about Patty Mills? The Bulls should orchestrate a trade for Patty Mills this offseason, maybe offering Chris Dunn and Denzel Valentine. And I don't know if that trade proposal was a joke from Gustavo, but man, I mean, talk about an ideal. I would love Patty Mills on this team. And the problem is he's under contract 2 more seasons with the Spurs at $13 million apiece. And, you know, we'll see what happens. They, you know, they just lost a pivotal game 5. They're down 3-2 in their series with Denver right now. But I can't imagine the Spurs letting Patty Mills go under that contract. I mean, The guy's a stud.
Yeah, he's on a good deal. Earn $12.4 million next year and then $13.2 million the year after that. And look, they drafted Derek White too, and they've got some other guards there, like set in stone and in place. But Patty Mills has been so good for that San Antonio team.
Yeah, they got DeJounte Murray who, you know, he had that injury, unfortunately, this season. But he's certainly looking like a guy who could turn into a real player for them. So, like, maybe, you know, an aging Patty Mills isn't, like, super high on their priority list with him and as you said, Derek White. But, like, Pop loves his savvy vets, man. And Patty Mills is the definition of a consistent, reliable vet. Which, by the way, you know, speaking of guys you really want to bring in and play and not worry about their injury history with, you know, whether it's Derrick Rose or Isaiah Thomas, look at Patty Mills' last four seasons in the NBA. 81 games, 80 games, 82 games, 82 games. Dude's a freaking Iron Man.
That's for sure. Speaking of Patty Mills, Matt, if OKC decides to do something drastic this summer and start to shift some of this money that they have because clearly things aren't working the way that they're currently constructed, Dennis Schroeder had a pretty good season for OKC, 15.5 points per game, 4.1 assists, 3.6 rebounds, shot 41.4% from the field, which isn't all that great, but still shot 34.1% from three, and I thought he played some really good defense, too, for that OKC team. I know he's on a weird contract, and it's $15.5 million I think he's owed for the next two seasons. The Bulls swing and miss on guys in free agency, and this is kind of the tier that we were talking about. Would Dennis Schroeder, would that interest you at all? And we even talked about this last year, too, before he went to OKC. But what do you think about Dennis Schroeder?
He's a tough one for me. Like, I don't think he would be on the top of my list. He's certainly talented. He's got some, you know, some offensive chops. You know, there was a sideline report about him in that Blazers Thunder game last night about the way that the Thunder just embraced him and asked him to essentially do what he does offensively to help out PG and Russ. When Atlanta got rid of
Jeff Teague,
who was their starting point guard?
Jeff Teague.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Thanks. So when they got rid of Teague and were like, we're gonna make Dennis Schroeder the guy. He kind of folded. Like, when he was given that opportunity to be the guy, the starting guard that's running your team, I feel like he fell a little short of the expectations that were put on him. And now, you know, that was a couple years ago. Perhaps he's matured a little bit, and he certainly at times was a really valuable piece to that OKC team this season. I also with him am concerned about money. And the kind of money that the league thinks that he's worth, that he thinks he's worth, and the Bulls putting not all, but a good chunk of their eggs this offseason in the basket of a guy who's a little bit of a risk.
Yeah, he signed his extension with Atlanta back in 2016, so he's still on the books for two more years, which lines up too with Otto Porter's contract. So if I was talking about anybody trading, that's where I'm looking for first is, where do these guys that maybe are a little bit more expensive, do they line up with Otto Porter and when he comes off of the books? Because that's necessarily where you want to be at. If the Bulls are going to be big players in free agency in 2 years, that's where you want to look at. If you're trying to be good right now or at least get this team to the next level, that's fine. But yeah, you need to have as much cap space open in free agency in 2 years if you're going to do that. And he's owed 15.5 right next year and
15.5 the next 2 years. So, right. Which would eat three quarters of the Bulls cap space this offseason.
Right. And depending on who you send back to kind of match that, I mean, you could offset that a little bit. So if you send one player back, maybe like a Chris Dunn and some picks, then you're still, that's only $10 million you're spending of your $20 million free. So not the worst idea in the world. Somebody else, too, that has been brought up on our text and voicemail line is Jeff Teague up in Minnesota. He's on a deal for one more year there. They're going to have to re-sign Tyus Jones this summer. And I think that they've got some other plans up there. But what do you think about Jeff Teague and what would you have to trade away in order to get him? I feel like he wouldn't be as expensive as maybe some of these other guys we're talking about.
Yeah. I've never been in love with Jeff Teague. I think he's
fine. Yeah, neither have I.
He's fine. He's a guy. You know, he's a player. But, I mean, he's on the books for $19 million next season. Do you think Jeff Teague is worth $19 million? Because I sure as hell don't. You know, again, yeah, like, no. I, you know, Otto Porter's not worth $25 million either. But at least he addressed a position of need and is a guy that we brought in and you know, got him by shipping out two players and two pieces that were not going to be around long term, given their situation. So I just, like, he's, to me, Jeff Teague has always been a guy who's like, he's fine. He can do a few things adequately, but he's not great at anything. He's just like, you know, carbon copy NBA player who has never wowed me in any way. And so to me, when I identify a player being that kind of player who's just like okay across the board and look at $19 million, like, no, I'm sorry. I'm like, Jeff Teague is not anywhere on my list for the Bulls to target their, you know, their backcourt guy this offseason.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And he only played in 42 games this season. And 12.1 points per game, 8.2 assists are exciting. But outside of that, like you said, the money, I think there's probably other options the Bulls can entertain as far as the trade goes rather than Jeff Teague. So this has been interesting, though. We've talked about a lot of point guards specifically, and I know this kind of took up...
You know, we haven't talked about...
Who's that?
Ricky Rubio.
Yeah, man. I've been on board for Ricky Rubio, even if the Bulls have to spend a little bit more. And I still think that that's a likely outcome. I really think that the Utah Jazz are going to try and upgrade at point guard this summer, which makes it even more enticing for the fact that I think the Bulls should go out and get him. And even if it costs you,
right,
even if it costs you $12 or $13 million, I know his AAV this year was $14 million, and that's what people are kind of expecting for next year.
Yeah.
Even if you got to pay that, I'm fine with it. I'm cool with that. I'm totally on board for Ricky Rubio.
I just think he is the best fit. I think we talked about this a little bit with, you know, our episode with Big Dave and John. We may have brought him up. The fact that he just, like, he played really well with Zach LaVine when those guys were in Minnesota together. And maybe I'm making too much out of that, but maybe I'm not. And maybe seeing Chris Dunn and Zach LaVine have zero chemistry whatsoever over the last couple of years, again, granted, limited, you know, sample size with their various injuries, but we saw that LaVine and Rubio have some chemistry and could play well together, and that their numbers, independently and together, were some of the best of their careers as far as efficiency and net ratings when they were on the floor together in Minnesota. So to me, like, you would probably make Zach LaVine happy if you bring in Rubio. He's a vet. He's got experience. He's got playoff experience. And he looked pretty darn good in that game four they just played against Houston.
Yeah, and the other thing I think about, too, is the other guard that he's played with for the last couple of seasons, and that's Donovan Mitchell. Donovan Mitchell's style, to me, reminds me a lot of what Zach LaVine is going to do for you on this Bulls team, so it's not like he has gone away from playing from a different style of player, and he's played alongside Donovan Mitchell, so it kind of makes sense, and he's been really good, and like you had said, and that was a point that I brought up yesterday, and you know, when we even talked about him at the trade deadline, too, is like, we went back and looked at his stats and him and Zach LaVine on the floor at the same time with the Minnesota Timberwolves, and they played really good. And specifically to Zach LaVine's point is he played really good alongside Ricky Rubio. And, you know, even I remember touching base with some Minnesota Timberwolves writers and asked them, like, is this a facade? Is this a mirage? Am I seeing something that's not really there with Rubio and LaVine on the floor together? And a lot of those guys said, no, they did play good. And what was weird is it was Rubio, Gorgui Dieng, and Zach LaVine somehow oddly played really well together, all three of those guys. So if Zach LaVine and Ricky Rubio are my front or my backcourt next season, I'm not going to be angry at all, because I think that's what you need. I really do. A guy that can not only knock down the three, play some hard defense, but also distribute, and Rubio's that guy, for me at least. And it seems like the Bulls had some interest at the trade deadline too, even, when they went and sent scouts to watch him in Utah, and also went and sent scouts to watch Darren Collison right before the trade deadline. So I would seriously keep our eye on Ricky Rubio. I think the Bulls are going to be interested in him this summer.
Yeah, you know, and not like a great three-point shooter, and I know I've been harping on the fact that I really want whoever the Bulls to get at the point guard spot this offseason to be a guy who can knock down the three, like, reliably. I think he's career, like, 32-33%, something like that, from behind the arc, which is not terrible. It's not great, But to me, the other elements of what he can do, the court vision, the basketball IQ, being that floor general that the Bulls have been lacking for years, and if he can knock down the occasional three, like, to me, that's still a major upgrade over Chris Dunn. And again, maybe even more important than that, as you said, is what it could do for Zach LaVine, who offensively right now and potentially again next season, as much as we like, you know, like Lowry and want to see him take a next step, is the most important piece for this team.
I agree with that. 12.7 points per game, 6.1 assists, 3.6 rebounds. He shot only 40.4% from the field, which isn't all that great. His effective field goal percentage, 45.8%, isn't good either. So maybe he's not even that expensive. Maybe he won't even be $14 million a year.
I was going to say, you could probably get him for two-thirds of that deal that he's on right now.
Yeah, even if you have to overpay
maybe
a little bit.
Maybe even half. You know, it'll depend on how many teams show interest and if the Bulls have to outbid somebody. And, you know, God knows that the Bulls love outbidding themselves, so let's hope that doesn't happen. But he, you know, they might have some competition for Rubio's services.
So that's a good point. That's who I'm highest on, at least this summer in free agency, is if the Bulls are serious about wanting to bring in a guy that's going to be upgraded at that position right away, spend a little bit more money and bring in Rubio. I can deal with taking a chance on a guy that you're going to have as a backup in your front court. Like I had mentioned yesterday, even Rashawn Holmes or Noah Vonleh or somebody that's going to come cheaper, way cheaper because you overspent on your point guard position. I'm okay with that. Just, for me, stabilize the starting point guard position this summer. If they can do that, I think I can live with any other move that they're going to make. That's going to be in terms of with their free agency money. I can live with that. Just give me a point guard that can play in the starting unit and stay healthy, right?
Yeah.
That's the only thing I'm asking for this summer. If they can do that for me, I'm all good.
Yeah, I'm with you. And, you know, who knows? I'm sure that they'll talk to a few different free agents and we'll see where it goes, and maybe they'll add one in the draft. But man, that's like, you know, every Bulls fan is stressing right now, rightfully so, because you got to get that point guard position right. It's just, I mean, look at these teams in the playoffs right now. How many teams in these playoffs making runs, winning playoff series, are doing so without a dominant, versatile point guard?
It's a good point,
because I can't think of a whole lot.
It's a good point. Well, I think that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. I know this is a shorter episode than we normally do for mailbag, so we'll catch up on the rest of the voicemails, the text messages you guys left us on Friday's episode. We've got special guests Tony Gill and Joey DeCaro for tomorrow's episode to talk about their podcast documentary that they've been doing for the last couple of months. And seriously, if you're not caught up on that right now, you should do that before tomorrow's episode, because we're going to break down a lot of different things and how that podcast kind of came about, and also some of the interesting things that they've learned over doing this podcast for the last couple of months. So right now, go and catch up. Behind the Headlines is the podcast. Go catch up on all of the episodes that are released right now. That's going to be a great conversation tomorrow. So we'll catch up on all of the voicemails and all the text messages on Friday. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Make sure you're subscribed to Locked On Bulls, Himalaya, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure you're subscribed to Locked On Bulls so you get our episodes as soon as they drop. For Matt Peckham, Jordan Malley, Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. We'll be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com.